The Halifax Pride Parade is scheduled for Saturday, July 16. This year, the Halifax Pride Society announced Tuma Young as the 2022 Halifax Pride Ambassador. Young has made a positive impact within the 2SLGBTQ+ community. Young discusses the challenges he faced growing up, the changes he's seen in Halifax, what people can expect from the Pride Parade, and more.
My name is Tuma Young, and I work at Cape Breton University as a professor and as a researcher.
And what are your pronouns?
Negem, N-E-K-E-M. And I just tell people I'm not too particularly hung up on pronouns because Mi'kmaq language is verb-based. It's not noun-based. And there's a few nouns in there, but even fewer pronouns. And the pronoun that we all use for everybody is negem.
And what does that translate to exactly?
That person.
So I read online that you used to be a lawyer. How long have you been a lawyer for?
I am a lawyer. I'm not used to be.
Oh, so you're a professor and lawyer.
Yes. I was called to the bar in 2001. I became the first Mi'kmaq speaking lawyer in Nova Scotia.
That was my next question. How did that come to be? How did you become the first Mi'kmaq speaking Nova Scotia?
Well, I graduated from Cape Breton University in 1997, and I was going to do an ethno-pharmaceutical degree with a joint degree with St. Mary's and Dalhousie, but they kept losing parts of my application, so I applied to law school as a backup. I just went to law school, and my communities told me that we already know you know about the medicinal plants, and we need lawyers. So they said, go become a lawyer. And so I did.
So you're the first Mi'kma'ki-speaking lawyer in Nova Scotia and first two-spirited person to be president of the Nova Scotia's Barrister Society last year. And this year you were announced as the 2022 Pride Ambassador.
Yes. Yeah, I quite a lot of firsts in my life everywhere. But not only I'm also the first Indigenous president of any law society in Canada.
That's very impressive. Can you tell us a little bit about the projects and contributions you've done or you've been a part of to allow such success?
I don't know where do I start. I just been doing this all my life, and basically. I came out when I was about 10 and in Escazonia at the Indian Day School, and there was nobody else around. And I heard, and the first name that, or the label that was given to me was sodomite by the nuns. And so I didn't even know what that meant, right? But they said that was me. I was a sodomite. So I went around, and if you look at it, my Twitter handle is that I'm a godless sodomite now. Anyways, I didn't realize it, but I ended up hopping the train, going back and forth to the big city. I ended up looking around and seeing, why aren't there any more gays and lesbians in my communities or anywhere else? Because there were just none and nobody was around. And that was the only one, right? You know, in the 70s. And then in the 80s, I just kept going back and forth to Halifax on the train. And I ended up at the train station in Halifax at the site, Nova Scotia Hotel. And my cousins were at the Lighthouse Tavern. And I just went there, and it was a strip bar. And I just hung around with them. They were older, but not wiser. And eventually I found out that all the gays and lesbians hung around at the Triangle, and that's where I went, and I found my people. And so I would go back and forth on weekends. Eventually, by the time I was 16, I moved to Halifax.
After moving to Halifax, Young started getting involved in HIV education. He discusses some of the initiatives he started for his Mi'kma'ki community.
And I got involved with HIV AIDS education and started up HIV AIDS education for the Mi'kmaq and Mausi communities in Atlantic Canada and including Quebec and stuff. So that was in the late 1980s and early 90s. At the same time, I was working for Stepping Stone, a street outreach service in Halifax. And we opened up the stroll for young gay men on Citadel Hill, Summer Street and Trollope. And we was helping doing a mainline needle exchange. You'll also find much of the story at the Wabanaki Two-Spirit Alliance.ca website, right? And so back and forth, I got involved in the health field. And after a while, I found out that I can only take my community as far as we can go, as far as I can go.
And that's when Young decided to pursue their post-secondary education.
And so I went to and got my degree at Cape Breton University. And then I went back and got my degree at the University of British Columbia, my law degree. I articled and was called to the bar in Nova Scotia in 2001. In 2002, I went to do my master's in law in Indigenous Peoples Law and Governance in the University of Arizona. And then I came back and I started working as a lawyer.
Young discusses the suicide crisis he said was present in his community.
We had a suicide crisis in one of the communities, well, in a lot of communities. And of course, Health Canada and everybody, you know, we formed a suicide intervention group. We had brought in therapists, etc., all the right things, all right, and training on suicide. And my cousin came up to me and told me, she said, she was at the committee and she said to them, and she was a straight cis woman. And she told them that one of the issues for the suicide was that they were two-spirited. And the committee said, no, we got that. That's okay. We already know that. It's all about alcohol and drugs. It's not about sexuality. And she said, I know that at least four of the women that killed themselves were lesbians and they couldn't face the fact that they were. And I said, we're doing all the right things. We're getting therapists, counseling, surprise. And she said, you need to do something. And I said, well, the community is doing it. She said, no, you have to do something. So I thought about it and I found other folks and I reached out and I discovered a cousin of mine, John R. He was two-spirited coming back from Costa Rica working in the community. And I said, let's have a gathering. We did. And in 2011, we held a gathering at Liscombe Lodge. We brought 55 two-spirited people there. And instead of doing suicide intervention, training, prevention, we said, we're going to show people what their roles are as two-spirited people in the communities so that you don't have to leave and go to big cities or that you don't have to kill yourself.
In 2011, Tuma Young co-founded the Wabanaki Two-Spirit Alliance along with John Siliboy. Their initiative was to represent the emotional, spiritual, mental, and physical well-being and interests of two-spirits and Indigenous LGBTQ+ individuals in the Wabanaki territory. Tuma continues to serve as their chair of the board.
And we just said, be who you are, be your authentic selves, and take on your roles. So from that gathering, we now have a judge, a Supreme Court of Nova Scotia. We have a Polaris Prize winner. We have folks who have done tremendous work. You have the first president of our society. We have people going for their PhDs, you know, and we have marriages. We've had all positive stuff happen. That's really what it's all about. Since then, I've looked at, we've had pride marches in many of our First Nations communities. We've had them in the Eskizoni, we had them in Waikagma. This year, we added Wamuku. Member 2 is a major sponsor of the Cape Breton Pride Parade. I think Millbrook had one. Millbrook plays in very support. Ilse Buktuk had, this is their second year.
So you're a member of the Eskasoni First Nation. Would you say the community has progressed when it comes to LGBTQ+ acceptance and discussions?
Yes, it has, very much so. And it has done so a number of years. When I first came out, there was absolutely nobody. And I found out later on my brother had come out in the late 60s and he was literally chased off the reserve. When I came out, it was still legal to be gay. You can be fired for, you know, from stuff. And in fact, at the first Pride March in 88, four people had to wear a mask over their head because they were provincial government employees and they couldn't, you know, be identified. And even Eskizoni, it took a long time. And the conversation had to occur during the HIV/AIDS crisis, right? You know, we talked about HIV and AIDS and, you know, safer sex and injection drug needs. And you can't talk about that without talking about gay men too, because the pandemic or the, you know, hit gay men, you know, first and hardest in a way, right? And then it hit communities of color, you know? So we talked about it, and I talked about it openly, and the fact that it took courage to stand up to elders who were maybe teaching about homophobia from their own experiences of the Indian residential schools and in the Indian day schools. And I remind people that it's not just the Indian day residential schools, but it's also the day schools. They were just as bad. And I'm an Indian day school survivor. I spent 10 years in the Indian day school in Eskasoni. We tell people, come out and just be who you are. And it took a while. And people started coming out. And when they would come out, their families' attitudes would change. And now it was Eskasoni has moved from 1960s. They would literally chase somebody out. To now they had a powwow, and you can enter into any gender categories you want. You can wear whatever you want. And a couple of years ago, they had the princess pageant, which is the winter princess pageant. And there's a whole basis for the princess pageant is that young girls who were leaving the day school and they would go to provincial schools, they didn't have any clothes. So the community would have a princess pageant. They would sponsor companies or store owners or people would sponsor people. And that would allow the young girls to buy clothes or fashion or name brands or whatever it is. So they wouldn't be ostracized when they go to high school or after reserve, right? And a few years ago, they allowed a trans woman to compete. And this is sponsored by the church committee. They've come a long way.
Young discusses his experience attending Indian day schools growing up.
The Indian day schools were run by the federal government because the jurisdiction for education rests with the province, but except on reserves is federal, so it was a federal responsibility. And so the federal government ran Indian day schools in many of the communities. You went to the school there and you went home. So all the same curriculum, same approaches, same abuses that happened at the residential school happened at the Indian day schools. And in fact, the only difference between the residential schools and the day schools were that we got to go home at night. Their primary educational was not education, but to make us into domestics or laborers. You know, there was how to operate a farm, some labor stuff, carpentry work, etc. Not a whole lot of education. And in fact, one of the successes that we've achieved here, Mi'kmaq communities have taken over jurisdiction over education through the Mi'kmaq and Amadoue, and they took that in the 1990s and 2000s. They took over jurisdiction. But Eskasoni took over control of the school in 1980. And pretty shortly after that, you know, the curriculum changed. When I left Indian Day School in grade 6 and I went to grade 7 in East Bay, I found that I was about 2-3 years behind. Instead of having a grade 6 education, I probably had a grade 3. And this has a lifelong impact, right? So when students left grade 9 in Eskasoni and they went to Riverview or Sydney Academy, they all dropped out. And people blamed them, but they didn't blame the system. Nobody looked at the system and realized that the Indian day schools were, their curriculum was vastly behind. We were not allowed to take French. Despite the fact in the 70s, bilingualism, education was required and French was being taught in provincial schools, French was never taught in Indian day schools, even though it was a federal government school. So when we went to high school, since we didn't have junior high French, we were not allowed to take French. And that's why our governor general, Mary Simon, she didn't speak French. And there was a criticism of her taking that job as governor that she wasn't able to speak French. Well, she went to an Indian day school. And that's why. There's a little video saying, you're held back at the starting line. Well, some of us never even got to the starting line. To get to where a lot of us in the Two-Spirit community, it's quite an incredible achievement.
Young said his community has progressed further than it has ever in the past.
To go from 11 years where our communities, our lesbians and gay men and Two-Spirit folks were killing themselves at an extraordinary rate to now being, we have a chief who came out of that gathering. We have Polaris winner, we have judges, we have amazing people, PhDs and master's degrees, economic development officers now. And and traditional folks. And so, we've come a long way in such a short time.
Although Young suffered many challenges, he said he has always been part of the Pride Parade.
I tell people, we were always here. We were always at the marches. We were always at the parades. And that doesn't mean that it wasn't always easy. There are some very difficult times, you know, but we were always part of the movement.
So the Halifax Pride Parade scheduled for Saturday, July 16. What does the Pride Parade mean to you and being the ambassador of it for this year?
Well, it means coming back to our own community. This is where it kind of started for me, you know, in Halifax. And, you know, I'm part of the community and stuff like this. And it also means an acknowledgement of the fact that Ohnu people were here and we celebrate our Ohnuness, that we do not have to give up our Ohnuness or our identity as Indigenous people to be part of the queer community or to LGBTQ plus community. That we will celebrate who we all are and that there's no different sides to us. That's what it really means. And the ambassador, to be able to go and be part of it, I often think about it and people say, well, the Pride Parade used to be a protest. Yes, it was. You know, started off as a protest. And it's now a social event, you know. And people say it's also commercialization and lots of it. And I'm like, yes, but I remember a time when, a couple of years ago, I was at the Pride event and I spoke at a Scotiabank in business meeting of LGBTQ plus professionals. And I was like, oh my God, you know, now 20 years ago, you couldn't even get a bank account if you were openly gay. Like here, now they're courting our business. I'm like, yeah, we've come a long way.
I guess my final question for you is what can people expect from this year's festival?
Expect to have fun. I tell people, have fun because life is too short.
In addition, Young addresses current Indigenous issues and encourages people to learn more about Indigenous treaties and affairs.
We need to have workshops on reconciliation, murdered and missing and Indigenous women's calls to justice, because a lot of those murdered and missing Indigenous women and girls, they're actually trans women. We brought this up to the thing, and that's in the report. We have now implementation that the Wabanaki Two-Spirit Alliance is working on national committee on how to implement the calls to actions, implementation strategy, implementation plan. And we also say to folks, you need to learn about the treaties. You know, you need to see everything through the treaty lenses, you know, treaty education, cultural competency. It's not enough to stand there and say we are on Mi'kma'ki land. That's a start, but what does that mean? And because I say reconciliation is difficult, it's hard work. There's still a long ways to go. And for example, not even a little over a year ago, 250 children were found in Kamloops. A couple weeks later, there were 750 in another community. Since then, 10,000 children's graves have been found. If we use the Kingsey scale of 10% being two-spirited, so 1,000 of those children were two-spirited. They're dead. We must never forget that. We must never forget where we've come from and how difficult a time to get to where we come from. And we're here and we can celebrate now our who we are, living our authentic lives. And then we, tomorrow, we'll get to work again.
That was Tuma Young, the first Mi'kma'ki speaking lawyer in Nova Scotia and the 2022 Halifax Pride Festival Ambassador. This is Sarah Gouda, CKDU.